Can I read you a review?
Yeah.
That I found for us on iTunes?
Please.
Is this a good idea?
It's a 3-star review. Yeah. It says, "You guys are super knowledgeable and insightful, but your inside jokes and silliness are undercutting your message and frankly are annoying." Then in parentheses, "Are Claire and Galen having an affair?"
Listeners want to know.
Hello and welcome to the 538 Politics Podcast. I'm Galen Druk, and this is part 2 of Buy, Sell, Hold. Today, we're going to be looking at the House. And in case you weren't with us yesterday, we looked at the Senate. And this is a little game we like to play where we throw caution to the wind and debate the odds listed in the forecast. So here with me to do that are senior politics writer Claire Malone. Hey, Claire, how's it going?
Hey, Galen.
And Micah, managing editor. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
Did we come to a conclusion about who won yesterday? I guess we can't really come to a conclusion until the election happens.
In thinking back on it, I think I was not consistent in how I answered some races. So I think Claire won.
Well, you got to hedge, right?
I was trying to go for like a single unified theory of the Senate map that I don't think I quite achieved. But if I had to do it all over again, I think I would go with partisanship will win out.
Well, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, sometimes it rains.
Again, Nate is not here. He does not believe in second-guessing the model. But thank you, listeners, for indulging us in these final grueling days of this election. Here's how we're going to do this. We are not going to go through each of the 435 House races or even the roughly 100 competitive ones. We're going to look at the odds associated with Democrats taking a certain number of seats. And let's begin with the overall odds of Democrats taking the House. Right now, according to the classic model, which we're going to use for this exercise, and if you guys like, you can point to the deluxe or light forecast to kind of back up your assertions. But the overall odds of Democrats winning a majority in the House are 6-7 or 85%. Claire, buy, sell, hold.
I'm going to go for a unifying theory of the House.
Yes.
Taking inspiration from Micah yesterday and say, let's go with Democrats are going to have like a really good night.
Mike, are you going to agree with that?
I think there's a good case for that. Democrats have done really well in special elections. Democrats have overperformed in special elections to a greater extent than like you would think based on the generic ballot, for example. Their performance in special elections lines up closer with the margins implied by fundraising, for example. So like to Claire's point, there's a case that we're looking back on Wednesday and saying, oh, actually, fundraising, special elections, those were the more meaningful indicators, and Democrats freaking cleaned up.
So you would say then that the polls missed. They reflected a worse chance for Democrats than will actually be the result.
Yeah, it sort of depends, right? I mean, the polls are good for Democrats.
Mike is going to do as much as he can to talk before he says buy, sell, or hold.
The polls are good for Democrats. So if the polls are right, then Democrats are going to win the House. You know, I think we would look back and say fundraising, special elections were a bigger indicator if Democrats win towards the higher end of our range. So like 50, 60 seats.
So what you going to say, Micah?
Sell.
You're going to wait, what?
So here's why. If you look at our light forecast, we have Democrats with about a 3-4 chance. So that's just based on the polls. So the single unified theory there sort of matches my single unified theory for the Senate, which is partisanship wins out. Partisanship is a bigger predictor this year than it has been in past years.
Okay.
So I think most of our working assumption for this game is that Democrats are going to win seats in the House. But before we move ahead with that, let's actually check to make sure that that's what you actually think. So our model gives Republicans a less than 0.1% chance of picking up seats overall. Claire.
Sell.
Buy, sell, hold.
You think that even less likely than less than 0.1%? You think there's no chance Republicans
pick up
seats?
No, I think there's more of a chance that...
Oh, then you're buying.
You're buying.
Sorry, yeah. Wait.
At those odds for Republicans, less than 1%, I'm buying. They're going to win. They're going to overall win one.
What I'm trying to say is I think that there is a greater than 0% chance that Republicans could pick up seats. I think it's incredibly unlikely. But
so what would have to happen? It would have to be an epic polling miss.
Plus something insane would have to happen
You could say, like, there's a lot of stuff that's happened in the past week in the news, and polls might not pick it up, but maybe it motivates Trump voters and they decide to come and turn out. You know, like, that's what Trump is hoping to do, I think, with this. I mean, it's been a dark 7 days and whatever, you know, week, 10 days, however you want to put it, with the bombings and then the shooting in Pittsburgh and Trump's really just weird responses, I found, to Pittsburgh. And then this stuff with the caravan, and he released this ad this morning that is very, very race-baity, racist.
And that's about the caravan.
And that's about the caravan and
tying it to
a guy who killed cops, who was a Latino immigrant. So, like, I do think that there's maybe some chance that those things could, like, not be picking up in the polls that are being put out into the field right now, and we won't know until Election Day, the ultimate poll. The only poll that matters.
But you're not making the argument that Republicans will gain seats. You're making the argument that the chance that they gain seats is greater than 0%.
Yes.
Just to clarify.
Whether or not that's buying or selling, you decide.
You're renting and then auctioning it off. It would be like a version of 2016 times a million, where it just turns out that the districts where the House will be decided are more Republican-leaning, they're more rural than the country overall, and the electorate that turns out is just not what pollsters expected. I mean, look, like...
There's a few days left. Let's talk about
something
this.
Happens.
Something happens with the election system.
There's a terror attack. God forbid.
Jesus. Yeah, I hate talking about this stuff.
No,
but it is.
Yeah.
So that's accounting for, like, the really outside-the-box scenarios, and we can't discount them.
I think you referred to this yesterday as the norovirus possibility.
Right. So if every Democratic voter in every congressional district came down with norovirus and not the Republicans, then that would be, like, you know, that's the outside box scenario.
We should say, I think the way Nate designs this model, it's designed to have fat tails, which is to say it gives...
Fat bottom tails, you make the rockin' world.
It gives... The model is sort of open-minded in terms of these extreme outlier cases.
It's giving, man.
The other thing is, like, if you look at our light forecast, which again is just polls, you see the tail is a little fatter in terms of the Republicans gaining seats end of the curve. Again,
I mean,
this is not going to happen, but yeah.
Let's move to a little perhaps more realistic scenario, which is one in which the Democrats still do not win the House, but they win fewer than 19 seats. And the odds that the classic forecast gives of that happening is 10%. So 1 in 10. Democrats win fewer than 19 seats. Micah, this goes to you. Buy, sell, hold.
Sell. Got to be consistent. First of all, 19 seats is a decent number of seats, right? Democrats could win the national popular House vote by like 5-6 percentage points, and them gaining, let's say, 15 seats wouldn't be crazy under those conditions, given the way people are distributed and the way districts are drawn. So there's just like a decent chance that Democrats fall just short of a House. That scenario, according to our forecast, is in the, like, as Nate described it, the meaty part of the bell curve. It's not like in the tails, like Republicans gaining. And then again, if you're someone who thinks, you know what, partisanship is going to be a bit more predictive this year than in past years, then I think I'd assign it a slightly higher percent chance of happening.
But then you'd be buying if you think there's a greater than 1
thank
in 10
you.
Chance.
Oh, I'm not the only one who's confused game. Oh.
Yeah,
I'm buying.
I was sitting here in my chair, like, doubting whether or not I was like, wait, isn't he buying?
Yeah, I was like,
wait, so I'm
buying.
I'm buying
1 in 10 odds of Democrats getting less than 19 seats.
I will buy the prospect of Democrats gaining less than 19 seats at 1 in 10. It's more likely than 1 in 10.
Okay. Claire.
Okay, so I have to sell because I am taking the position that I think Democrats are going to do better, perhaps, than the model indicates. So I think they are going to win more than 19 seats. Therefore, I have to sell. I mean, Mike kind of already said this up top, but a lot of it is the small indicators that we're seeing as far as, I mean, we had a whole podcast segment maybe a week or two back about, you know, in these early surveys, people are saying that they're very enthusiastic to go out and vote. You're seeing big fundraising numbers. I find it a more interesting proposition that you could see, you know, maybe historic turnout, midterm turnout for this kind of year based on some of the early indicators that we've seen and the activation for the past 2 years of, you know, groups like women and the idea that a couple of states have exciting candidates for minority voters. So minority constituencies in like Georgia and Florida might come out and vote in higher numbers because they have a candidate with whom they identify. And, you know, someone like Barack Obama, for instance, in 2008 and 2012, saw huge turnout for black voters. And then, you know, black voters didn't turn out a lot for Hillary Clinton in 2016. So I don't know. I think I'm kind of basing it on that, where maybe there's something to the fact that this midterm could be a little bit of an outlier in terms of enthusiasm that we see from people, because usually people don't turn out in enthusiastic numbers for midterm elections. But this one, you know, I am certainly immersed in politics. That's my bias of my environmental factors. But it feels like it's permeating a lot of parts of American culture. And I am interested to see if there are effects that we see of that on Election Day for Democrats.
I mean, look, there are, to Claire's point, according to our forecast right now, the classic forecast, there are 26 seats that are rated as lean or likely Democratic. So if Democrats just win those, plus the 191 solid Democratic seats, I think that puts them at 217, which is one short of a majority.
Right.
So, you know, in that world, they have gained more than 19 seats pretty easily, you know, and then you're not even talking about the 18 toss-ups or the 18 or 19 lean Rs. Yeah, it's really not hard to imagine this night going like really well for Democrats.
So let's test that possibility of the night going really well for Democrats. The forecast, the classic forecast, gives them a 10% chance, 1 in 10 odds, of winning more than 59 seats. So, Micah, buy, sell, hold.
So here's what's weird. You know how I've been kind of selling all this stuff or operating under the assumption that Democrats might do a little worse than our model indicates? Part of the reason I was doing that is because our light forecast is a little more pessimistic for them. But actually, our light forecast gives Democrats a 10% chance of winning more than 60 seats, which is not all that different than the classic forecast.
Mm-hmm. Well, the light kind of embraces more uncertainty, perhaps.
Yeah, I don't know if it's, I think maybe it's that the curve on the light forecast is just flatter, which is to say, you know, it's more evenly distributed between the kind of middle of the road outcomes and the more extreme outcomes. But I don't know. Again, we've talked about this a little bit, but you don't have to look hard for signs that Democrats could not only have a good night, but have a freaking amazing night. It's the stuff Claire mentioned about fundraising, about enthusiasm sort of breaking through into quarters that normally don't turn out into midterms. But to keep consistent, I got to sell that. And the reason is that's a shitload of seats. That's a lot of seats.
Can we give listeners what's the current? So what's the number of seats they need to flip to turn the House?
23. Yeah. So Democrats currently, and there's some footnote here about how you count vacant seats, but currently we show Democrats as having 195 seats. I believe that's counting vacant seats as belonging to the party that last held them. So they need 23 for the majority. Yeah, right now it looks like they will quite easily pick that up. We've talked about this a little bit before, but it's kind of the same thing with the Electoral College in 2016, where you don't have to travel all that far between the national political environment doesn't have to change all that much to go from Democrats barely squeaking out a majority or barely falling short to Democrats winning like 85 seats. The 85 is a lot of seats. But there are a bunch of districts that are gerrymandered by Republicans. Galen, you should weigh in here. That are like, I don't know what the exact numbers are, but they're like, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11 points more Republican leaning than the country overall. And they were gerrymandered to be safe in almost any election. But it's kind of like, you know, with the levee that breaks in a 100-year storm. If there is a 100-year storm this year, then all of a sudden you add a bunch more districts to the at-risk category for Republicans.
So I think that is in part true.
Yeah.
But this idea that I've heard about of a gerrymander backfiring, it's pretty hard to do. I mean, if you look at the states that are quite successfully gerrymandered in our forecast right now, places like Texas, Michigan, Wisconsin, North Carolina, Texas is a huge state. There's only one district in that entire state that we forecast flipping right now, right?
Yeah.
If you look at states where there is a commission or the courts drew the map, states like California, states like New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Minnesota, those are the states that have so many more possible flips. Part of the story of those states is that these are places where if Democrats could have gerrymandered in 2010 and there wasn't a commission, they would already have these seats.
Right.
So we're going to see a lot of those flips. I would doubt there would have to be a much larger wave or tsunami for places like Texas or Wisconsin or North Carolina to have like a gerrymander actually backfire. And if we're in that territory, Democrats have had an amazing night.
No, but that's kind of what we're talking about is I don't know if that happens with like a national environment of D plus 10 or if it takes like D plus 15 to happen. But that's not totally out of the realm of the possibility. That's the Claire scenario.
Yeah, but now I'm thinking maybe I should just hold on this one because it's pretty unlikely.
It's pretty unlikely. But look, Republicans gained 63 seats in 2010. We should do an article, by the way, Galen, you should do it, of forecasted Democratic pickups by type of redistricting rules.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I haven't done a rigorous study of this, but I think for multiple reasons, it's not just that Republican gerrymanders prevent Democrats from winning seats. It's also because a lack of a Democratic gerrymander right. has kept some seats competitive for Republicans over the past 8 years. Anyway.
You look at like Democrats are forecasted right now to pick up 1, 2, 3, 4 seats in Pennsylvania alone. And why is that? Because Pennsylvania had its gerrymandered map thrown out, right?
Yeah.
So it gives you an idea of just how big of a factor these maps are playing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Pennsylvania and California alone, right there, you have 10 seats.
Right.
There's another question that's worth asking here, which is that we're having this conversation on a day when we assign an 85% chance to Republicans of keeping the Senate and an 85% chance to Democrats of winning the House. Are we willing to say which we are more confident in? Do you think there's a better chance that Democrats actually pull it out in the Senate or that Republicans actually pull it out in the House?
Senate.
I agree.
Why is that?
Because the Republicans are just in an extremely bad place in the House, I think. And in the Senate, there's a more likely map I see for, okay, we end up holding these seats and we end up flipping these couple of like very vulnerable seats. I just see more of a path for it.
Yeah, there are, I think of the House data as like more diversified in a way where you're getting all these polls all over the country and all these different districts.
And it seems a little more predestined almost.
Yeah, where in the Senate, there's few enough races or few enough sort of like coin flips where it just kind of feels
the chances are greater. The uncertainty is greater, it feels like, in the Senate for both sides.
I think Nate, as a model, if he were here, he would say, well, the forecast accounts for this stuff and blah, 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 blah. But it just feels in your gut like a little more uncertain.
Yeah.
We're being pretty kind to Democrats here. But you think that there's just more uncertainty in the Senate? You know what? That is actually not reflected in the different models because Light, Classic, and Deluxe are all about 85% in the Senate.
I
but
know.
If you switch to the House, there's 77% according to the Light.
I'm on the record, though, saying that there are some – I feel like we don't know enough about some of the Senate races.
The gap, though, in the House between the light forecast, where Democrats have about a 75% chance, and the classic forecast, where they have about an 85% chance, is kind of interesting. And that's mm-hmm. a pretty big gap for five days before an election.
That is true.
Yeah.
Well,
we should get some listener input on this. Do you think, listeners, there is a greater than 10% chance that Democrats gain fewer than 19 seats? Or do you think there's a greater than 10% chance that Democrats gain more than 59 seats?
Which is you could think both of those things, though.
You could. Okay, let me phrase it this way. Which is more likely, listeners, that Democrats gain fewer than 19 seats or that Democrats gain more than 59 seats?
Okay, that's a good question.
Which is more likely, Claire?
That Democrats gain fewer
than 19 seats or more than 59 seats?
Fewer than 19.
I'm going to go more than 59.
Oh, conflict.
I know that answer just contradicted my entire theory of things, but 59 seats is a lot.
That's a lot of seats. According to our model, those two things have the same chance of happening.
10%. You know what had a 10% chance of happening in 2016?
A popular vote electoral college split.
Exactly.
I think it was actually 11% chance.
Well, we will leave you with that bit of information to ponder. Thank you, Claire.
You know, it was a pleasure. And Micah has to go to a meeting. So I'm going to make my goodbye as long as...
So there's 5 days
possible.
Until Election Day. Claire, what are you going to be doing over the next 5 days to get ready for the big day?
Working out a lot, you know, I'm entering my taper period, so really just trying to relax and just be, you know, limber and just, like, get a lot of sleep.
It has been an absolute pleasure joining you guys. I have to go.
All right, that's a wrap. We will have a new episode of Model Talk coming your way tomorrow to complete this week of daily podcasts. My name is Galen Druk. Tony Chow is in the control room. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcasts@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with questions or comments. Also, go review us in the Apple Podcast Store. Tell us what you think, even your conspiracy theories about Claire and I. You can also tell someone about the show. Hey, if you're interested in what's going on in this election, or if you want to be data literate, go listen to those 538 people. Anyway, thanks again for listening, and we will see you soon.